What's up, fellas? It's Bush here. We have tons of tools to get you ready to smoke your buffoon league mates in our redraft rankings manifesto. Whether you're looking for our consensus tiered-based rankings, top 200s, and by position, fantasy football news blurbs to keep you informed and find this year's Puka Nacua, risk ratings so you know how risky the draft picks you're spending are, the truth series so you can see how their 2023 season went, or you can compare our rankings to Sleeper, to ESPN, to Underdog, to Yahoo, to NFL, whichever platform you're drafting on, we have you covered this year with our Redraft Rankings Manifesto. Right now, you can get our draft guide for free by signing up on Underdog Fantasy using just $10 and using code FSE. If you already have an Underdog account or you can't play where you live, you can also head to flockfantasy.com. Use the code FSE for a 7-day free trial, 30% off any of the packages, and all of that is linked in the description of all of our videos if you need the links for that. All right, let's roll the pod.
No notes. We've been arguing about it these last few days. Let's talk about it on camera and dissect each other's rankings.
Yeah, so we got Mason on the channel here. We're going to go through, basically talk about one player that we're too high on, one player that we're too low on. Mason, since you are the guest, we are going to start with you. Me and Danny looked at your rankings, and we noticed that you are too high, sir, on James Conner. So you need to explain yourself. You had him RB17, I believe.
Yeah.
Again, fluid range, I think, for me and Danny. It's like you can kind of put anybody up there, but why Conner?
Couple different things. I want to acknowledge, one, these are rankings for casual ESPN, Yahoo, NFL fantasy home leagues, right?
Yeah.
These are home league rankings. If we are assuming you're playing in an active home league, everything that we've heard at training camp is Trey Benson's not going to have a role at the beginning of the year. And if you're able to go through, have the hot start from James Conner, you're able to potentially go through, flip him. And even if you don't flip him, we know that running back production is always so difficult to project out. And every week you get further down the road, it's tougher to project. So you could be in a situation that you get a really good start before Trey Benson comes on at the beginning of the year. And then by the time you get later to the season, you found another running back off the waiver wire if Conner does fall off.
Those are all fair points. I think my only interjection to this would be it's a young offense. They're going to want to get guys involved. And I think it's all big talk sometimes with these, yeah, like this guy's going to be the workhorse. The second you see these guys actually perform in games, that would be my only argument against James Conner. But again, following the coach speak, I think you definitely have a point. And again, this running back 16 to running back 24 range, if you're playing for early season upside, I think that's definitely viable. Yeah. I think Mason made a great case, Dan. Do you have anything against James Conner being maybe pushed up the rankings? I specifically feel like I'm lukewarm on him, but it's mainly for the late season upside. And if for specifically correct for home leagues, I feel like, you know, the projection's a little more, yeah, favorable, yeah, early on.
Can I say one thing real quick?
What's up?
Go ahead.
In Underdog, Best Ball, if you're drafting Best Ball Mania, I'm actually severely underweight James Conner.
Me too.
Because there, we're optimizing for points in weeks 15, 16, 17. But specifically in our redraft leagues, it's going to be a little bit different, especially like I'm assuming the flock league that we're going to do tomorrow. I'm kind of going to be drafting to get points at the beginning of the year, you know, because I know I'm going to draft James Conner. And then after the fourth week, I'll sell him to Joe and I'll get a running back that has late season upside.
So basically Mason's saying, if you can prey on the weak link in your league and get James Conner yeah bags off your team, you can do it. I will say that is the one caveat I have. You need someone to be able to pry those bags of James Conner off of you, because quite frankly, I do not want to be left holding the bag. I agree the early season viability, especially if you're in a zero RB league, I understand grabbing James Conner for the guaranteed touches early. However, I will say once week four, week five, week six runs around, I do not want to be left with him on my roster.
Yeah, and it's not only, I think it's a double-edged sword. You're like, oh, in casual leagues, I can sell him to my league mates.
They're less likely to trade.
Yeah, not only that, but they're also less likely to let him fall to the seventh round where I would feel comfortable taking him, or the sixth, yeah, round where I'd feel comfortable taking him.
Well, for sure, if you're taking top five rounds, don't take him.
Yeah, so yeah, RB17, again, just ADP-wise, where you have to take a top 17 running back in a casual home league, to me, is probably the first five rounds, just based on the way that most casual home league drafters draft. They don't want to have one running back on their roster through the first five, six rounds. Like 85, 90% of your league is going to want at least two, if not potentially more, running backs. So I feel like a guy like James Conner, because he's been productive in the past, because people feel comfortable with him, is going to get inherently pushed up the board. So amongst running backs, I don't think RB17 is an egregious ranking of him. I think it's more so the overall where you'd actually agreed have to take him in a home league.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Awesome. Well, running back that I know y'all said I was too low on, that I think is in a garbage offense and potentially the RB2 in a bad offense, Tajay Spears. Well, what am I missing here?
So with Tajay Spears, I think it's mainly a bet that the starter ahead of him is, first of all, pretty shaky.
Very
I think
volatile.
It's also a bet on the skill set that this offense is going to play to. I mean, you got Brian Callahan coming in. They ran a top five pass rate offense with Jake Browning last year. I feel like with Will Levis's skill set, they're going to want to throw the ball. And Tajay Spears and Tony Pollard have virtually been a split to start the year. So again, it's a split backfield and a bad offense, like you said. But as the season goes along, this kind of runs conversely to the way that you'd want to play a guy like James Conner. As the season goes along, I feel like Tajay Spears, before quickly, could absolutely take over that backfield. And I feel like where you're getting him, you're kind of drafting him in like the eighth, ninth round, potentially later in casual leagues. Not a lot of people know who Tajay Spears is. I think you're getting a good value on him, and I would rather take him over some of the kind of milquetoast options in like the mid-30s.
Yeah, and adding to the point when it comes to Tony Pollard, because I feel like the majority of it is you believe the veteran running back got paid in free agency, should get the goal line work. The problem with that when it applies to Tony Pollard is he's never been an efficient goal line back inside the 10, inside the 20-yard line, actually graded as one of the most inefficient backs in terms of being able to score touchdowns. A guy that hasn't crossed over six touchdowns more than once in his entire career, one time in 2022 was able to accomplish it, hasn't accomplished it in any single other year of his career. So with me, when I look at it, I understand he's unproven in this aspect, but if Tony Pollard is struggling in that role early on, I do think there's a case where Tajay Spears could very well work inside the five, inside the 10-yard line, because quite frankly, we have evidence that Tony Pollard isn't very good at it, whereas Tajay Spears very well could be.
See, my thought process is, I don't care who's the 60-40 back. I don't care if it's 40-60. Right now, sportsbooks are projecting it, I believe, to be the fifth worst offense in the NFL in terms of total points scored. And I think it is a split backfield. So I view it as, I'm okay with having a committee running back in a top offense. But if I think that it's a committee, whether it's Spears, whether it's Pollard's the lead guy, I don't really care. I probably want to be avoiding both players, at least personally.
It's more so anti-Titans rather than anti-Spears. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, fair.
We've been a little bit more pro-Titans as far as maybe not necessarily how many games they'll win. Like, I don't think they'll be great, but I think they could be the, you know, Jameis Winston-y kind of vibe to them where they have fantasy-relevant players like Ridley, like Spears, who, even though they're not winning games, and they might just be like an average to below-average scoring offense in total, I think that Spears is a good enough player, showed a lot efficiency-wise as a rookie, to the point that if this offense is just functional and they're throwing a lot, too, and there's a lot of volume to go around, I think Spears could catch 60, 70 passes.
Well, but I know we're going to talk about some wide receivers with you.
We will.
Let's stick it with running back because we checked in.
I have one more point on you,
too. Okay, let's go.
Is that with Brian Callahan coming in, obviously he has that Bengals scheme in mind there, running with the Tennessee Titans, hires his dad, Bill Callahan. If you guys are unfamiliar with Bill Callahan, arguably the best offensive line coach of all time, invest in the offensive line with that seventh overall pick, obviously add perimeter talent this year. That kind of gives credence. Again, I understand the Vegas sportsbooks do have them as the fifth worst projected offense, but I do think there's a lot of meat left on the bone to potentially not only usurp that, but potentially be a breakout offense personally.
Awesome. Well, you would stick with another bad offense running back situation where Core we checked has like Jalen Warren RB20, Najee Harris is RB32.
Yeah, I think it's a slightly different gap than that after Jalen Warren's injury. I believe they moved him down a couple spots and Najee Harris like one or two spots. But for me, I look at this backfield and I think that Arthur Smith is going to do crazy stuff. I think we all know this about Arthur Smith. Najee Harris profiles to be the goal line running back, probably the guy that gets like the bulk of the carries. We've known unequivocally that Jalen Warren's the better player. We've known unequivocally that Najee Harris is going to be pretty much inefficient on most of his touches. I don't think that Warren would necessarily usurp Najee Harris when healthy. I think they probably like both of those guys to play two different roles. I just believe that the receiving upside, the potential like breakaway play ability, and the efficiency is what I would tether myself to. If you told me right now this backfield to me like a dead even 50-50 split, that's probably what it'll be, in my opinion. I think that's probably the projection we're looking at. Warren will do way more with his touches than Najee will do with his. And not only that, if Warren went down, I think Najee would be outscored by the inverse scenario happening. If Najee went down, I think Warren is much better than Najee is if Warren went down. So for me, it's just the contingent upside's better, and standalone value-wise, I think it's going to be relatively split backfield.
I will say, according to Pittsburgh Beat, Nick Faribault, actually follow on Twitter, shout out, but he's basically reported every single Steelers practice, and he said at this current point, it's 55-60% Najee working between the tackles. Obviously, that was even before the Jalen Warren injury. There's still a risk that, especially in the early portion of the year coming off of that injury, maybe instead of even a 55-45-60-40, we could be looking at a 65-35-70-30 type of situation. So in the early portion of the year, I do think we have to value Najee higher, because giving credits back to the James Conner point, if Jaylen Warren gets off to a slow start, I feel like it's a better opportunity to buy him late versus with Najee Harris. If he's getting 65% of the work in the early portion of the year, you may be able to sell him high. Again, it's not like I'm a big pro Najee guy or a big anti Warren guy. In fact, you guys have heard my takes on the channel before, but it's more so just knowing going into the year that there's uncertainty with the health status of Warren, why I would prefer Najee straight up.
Yeah, and what one other thing I want to add to it is I 100% agree with you. If they had the equal amount of opportunities, Jaylen Warren does more for with sure. them. We've seen that time and time again. Yeah. And I 100% agree with you that if Najee Harris got injured, Jaylen Warren has a higher ceiling than if the inverse happens. But the world that we're living in is I think Najee probably touches the ball more and Jaylen Warren's the one that's injured. So I think at this point, I understand wanting to have Warren ahead of Najee and maybe by a considerable gap, but with the Warren injury, I think they have to flip. I don't think you have to move Najee up to RB20, but I think you at least have to have Najee one or two slots higher than Warren.
Totally a fair critique with the backfield situation. The last thing I'll say is that Warren outscored Najee on way less touches last year. So even if it's not a 50-50 split, it's a 60-40 split for Najee Harris. Warren did more with his touches last year by a lot than Najee Harris. Sure. And like I said, in this area of the draft, I mean, you're talking eighth, ninth round, probably where Najee Harris and Warren go. Again, if they're going any higher than that, they're probably not great picks. I'm looking at a team where I'd already have a lot of built-in foundation to it. These guys are contingent upside, high-value plays. Like, I'm not drafting Najee Harris, especially for those of you guys listening to this that are in, like, start seven shallow leagues. Yeah. I would never draft Najee Harris because he doesn't have a super high ceiling. I would draft Warren because he's probably a bench stash for me anyways.
Yeah, I'll just quickly add back to that. I fully agree if they were both entering the year healthy. And in fact, when they were both healthy, I actually did have Warren over Najee. But with the news that he is banged up, that's what caused me to flip. Again, very close to my rankings. I just think at this point with the injury concerns, you should have Najee over Warren.
For sure. Let's weave in some wide receiver talk here, yeah. Danny. So they attacked me. The stance was basically that I was too low on the Pittsburgh Steelers backfield. Or I have it ranked wrong, I guess, is the stance there. So, Danny, I believe you are too low on Devontae Smith. I think the reason for that is the guys that you have him ranked, I believe you have him ranked around wide receiver 23, 24.
Wide receiver 23.
Yeah, you have him ranked behind guys that to me profile as like either number twos in worse offenses than Devontae Smith or number ones who have more questions about than Devontae Smith. For me, my stance on Devontae Smith has always been, I want pieces of this offense. I realize A.J. Brown's going to be the alpha there, but you still carve out a 25% target share for Devontae Smith because it's a very concentrated offense. Then I still want pieces of that. And I think the pass rate is bound to go up this year with Kellen Moore calling the shots.
I think it's bound to go up. But in terms of the specific names, again, I have my wide receiver 23. You have him more so in the late teens. What are the specific names that you think I should have Devontae Smith over just so I can craft the argument around that?
So DJ Moore, DK Metcalf. I think you have Malik Nabers ahead of him as well. And I think I have him over Devontae Adams as well. I know that one's definitely an unpopular take for a lot of people, but guys like that who are number ones in worse offenses than what Devontae Smith is playing in, or kind of potentially in committees where we don't know who the number one is.
It really comes down to the fact that I think all three of those guys are talented players. I also think Devontae Smith is a talented player, but I do think the inherent pass rate of those three teams respectively will be higher than the Philadelphia Eagles. I understand with Kellen Moore coming in, it will inherently increase the pass rate. But when I'm looking at the Chicago Bears with that trio of receivers with Caleb Williams coming in, I think they will be a team that will throw the football a ton. DK Metcalf, obviously the benefit of Ryan Grubb I've talked about on the channel before with the JSN take, but I think Ryan Grubb coming in is a huge deal. 70% motion rate across the preseason. Ryan Grubb obviously top 10 in both deep pass rate and pass rate over expectation with Washington. Really with DK Metcalf, the high value targets working down the field on an offense I think will throw the ball is the reason why. And then what was the other one you said?
I think DJ Moore. Moore. The last thing I would say is like Devontae Smith had higher target shares than every one of these guys minus DJ Moore last year.
This is what I was going to point up because you look at like DK Metcalf, DJ Moore, these guys that are technically wide receiver ones on their depth chart, but the target share is going to be distributed to so many different players that even though Smith is the wide receiver two behind AJ Brown, his target share can still be higher than DK Metcalf's because you're not having to go up against Lockett as well as JSN. So personally, for me, I just view Smith as honestly a kind of better player than a lot of those guys. And the same thing is I think his target share is going to be right in line with those other players in a better offense.
Better offense, sure, but at the end of the day, they're going to have a lower pass rate, in my opinion, compared to the Seahawks.
I don't think that's a guarantee at all.
It could very well not be a guarantee.
The Bears and Shane Waldron versus the Eagles with Kellen Moore, like I think it's very possible they're both kind of league average, if not slightly above average pass rate.
Could very well be the difference is one has Saquon Barkley in the backfield, one has DeAndre Swift, Khalil Herbert in the backfield.
Yeah, how does that affect Devontae Smith?
In terms of pass rate. In terms of pass rate, you're mentioning a high run rate team last year with the Philadelphia Eagles. I understand they will increase inherently, but also it's going from a bottom five team in terms of pass rate to, are we expecting them to be top half of the league? Are we expecting them to be top 20?
I think
that's a big jump.
I think we're arguing the difference between a 570 pass attempt offense and a 550 pass attempt offense. And if you have a 25%.
That's a big projection to say the Eagles are going to get that far up.
550 pass attempts? That's like basically 20 more than they had last year.
So you're projecting what, the Bears to throw less or the Eagles to throw more?
No, I think it's going to be a negligible difference is what I'm saying. And I'd rather have the Devontae Smith target share from Jalen Hurts in that offense versus slightly more pass volume, I guess, and a clear-cut number one with DJ Moore, DK Metcalf. And I like DJ Moore and DK Metcalf, to be perfectly clear. I just think Devontae Smith is such a stone-cold lock for high-end wide receiver two production that I don't want to pass on that.
Again, very minute differences for the record, fourth-round players at the end of the day. You think the Eagles will throw the ball more than the Seahawks and the Bears? I think the inverse. So, I mean, we're talking about the difference between a late third, early fourth-rounder versus, again, I have Smith as a mid-fourth.
I feel like I'm watching my parents fight, and I'm a small kid, and I'm in the middle going back and forth.
We'll let's get to Jonathan Brooks. I'll let you pick the argument on Jonathan Brooks because Danny has him at running back 19 in his rankings. I have him, I think, in the mid-20s, if not the low-end 20s, just because, you know, kind of invert to your Connor argument. I'm a little worried about the way he's going to start off the year.
Yeah, honestly, what it comes down for me with Jonathan Brooks is that once I'm in the round 8-plus range at running back, I am striving for ceiling, especially because of the way I structure my teams, whether it's grabbing an anchor early or a double anchor early. Being able to grab a guy like Jonathan Brooks in round 8 on, having the upside to be a top 12 profile once he is fully healthy. And I understand that is the big caveat. He is on the pup right now. Not a great situation. I fully get that. But in terms of the prospect profile that we have for Jonathan Brooks, 3-down profile, electric runner between the tackles, and his ACL tear for the most part is a relatively clean tear, similar to that of what we saw from Breece Hall last year, a guy that week 5 on was averaging over 19 PPR points per game. So really, what it comes down for me with Jonathan Brooks is, philosophically, I prefer a high upside running back in that range over potentially, you know, middle RB2 type of work, because quite frankly, I can grab my Jonathan Brooks and backfill with, I mean, we mentioned Najee, we mentioned, you know, guys like Blake Corum later on, Rico Dowdle, Chase Brown. There's a lot of archetypes I like later on that I can backfill my production with, and I want to take my stab at elite upside.
Yeah, my thing with Brooks is, I think for like a BBM, perfect, right? He's going to have a low advance rate, sure, but for weeks 15, 16, 17, he can win you the tournament.
For sure.
Just in your regular redraft league, I don't necessarily think you need to be chasing that, especially if it's going to be a league where like your league mates are making trades through the course of the year, because you're sitting there with Brooks going, okay, his value is doing nothing from this point through the first 8 weeks. Now, the benefit is, if you're able to throw him on your IR, then you do get an extra roster spot inherently where you can go through and make additional waiver wire moves.
And for what it's worth, the Carolina situation, oddly enough, is one of the few situations in fantasy I'm actually confident with handcuffing, simply because Chuba Hubbard in the 15th round, if you're pessimistic about the pup time, we saw Chuba Hubbard be able to produce as an RB2 last year once he was able to usurp Miles Sanders. So if you're really concerned with Jonathan Brooks, do you think instead of week 3 coming back, it's closer to week 5, week 6? Again, that's a last round opportunity cost. If Chuba Hubbard was a 12th round, 13th round pick, I wouldn't be advocating for that. But in the final round, if you're really worried about Brooks, I'd be able to do that.
So we're going to waste 2 roster spots on the Carolina Panthers backfield?
If it's RB2 plus production, plus Jonathan Brooks having an RB1 ceiling once he comes back, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I push back on the RB1 ceiling because I think people, like, I'm very familiar with both Jonathan Brooks as a Texas fan and Dave Canales as a Buccaneers fan. I think people think that Dave Canales made Rashad White what he is, and he like definitely contributed to it, but they wanted to use Rashad White before they ever hired Dave Canales in a workhorse role. That was a Todd Bowles decision, not a Dave Canales decision. And I think Brooks, when healthy, would be a big workhorse back, but is he going to, fresh off an ACL tear for a rookie, give him a huge workload right away? I think this is a year 2. He's going to be a workhorse projection, in my opinion. I think, again, BBM tournaments totally make sense. In a standard home redraft league, I think you're talking about a very destined to be depreciating asset by week 5.
I will rebuttal that. I do feel like if you had the concern that he wouldn't be fully healthy at least by the first month of the season, Why would you trade up into the top 50 to go select Jonathan Brooks when you feel confident in Chuba Hubbard being able to lead the backfield?
Oh,
not to mention, Dave Canales was the head coach when they made that move.
They're not making that decision simply for 2024.
So they traded up into the top 50. They take a year two plus projection?
I mean, yeah. Like, they were hoping he would be back on the field by midseason, and that's probably what their plan is for him.
I don't see a scenario where you're playing for a running back again. A position that, quite frankly, is the most replaceable in the NFL, to trade up into the top 50 for a guy that you aren't confident in year one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they're confident in his recovery and things of that nature. I tend to think that it's more difficult to trade for a guy like Jonathan, or to
in
draft
fantasy.
A guy like Jonathan Brooks, hold him on your roster, soak up that bench spot or whatever, like you said, in an IR spot league, it's a little bit more stomachable. But anyways, Mason... You stood here while we argued, but we could roast more of Mason's rankings. I mean, I saw he had JSN pretty low. We already talked about that. You want to give a little bonus 30-second take on JSN before we get out of here?
If you look at all the historical data, JSN's rookie season, he is not Quentin Johnston, but he is trending towards the bus route. And I love JSN coming out, trust me. And Lockett's still there. I understand the change with the offensive coordinator is a lot of people saying more three wide receiver sets, more throwing the football. I get the positive case. I think I would rather just hit the reset button on one of those like round one guys this year that are in top offenses, such as Xavier Worthy, such as Brian Thomas Jr., such as Roma Dunsé.
With Tyler Lockett, you mentioned as the proven target. This is a guy that's seen his yards per route run decrease across the last 3 years since he peaked. Mm-hmm. And with JSN, I mean, we've heard all reports this offseason. They want to change the usage. He was a slot-only, low A-dot player last year.
Reception, darling. But he was better than the stats would indicate.
We mentioned earlier with Ryan Grubb coming in when I talked about DK, top 10 in terms of deep pass rate, top 10 in terms of pass rate over expectation. I think there's a lot of meat left on the bone for JSN to really develop his game into a three-level threat rather than that intermediate within 3 yard threat that he basically was last year.
Yeah, the premise of I would rather have Worthy, McConkey, Thomas, and so I actually disagree with that. I have those guys ranked over JSN. I think he just fits into that group of young upside shots that you're taking in the later rounds, and if you don't like him and you want to go McConkey or Thomas or whatever, that's totally
for sure.
Your jurisdiction in that area of the draft. So we talked a lot of rankings. Of course, if you guys want our rankings, you can head down to the link in the pinned comment, head to underdogfantasy.com, put some of this advice into action, use the promo code FSE when you sign up. You'll get 50% back on your first deposit up to $1,000, and within 24 hours, our draft guide will be in your email inbox. And of course, if you are not able to play Underdog, you already have an Underdog account, head to flockfantasy.com, use promo code FSE over there as well. Start your 7-day free trial, get 6 months for free when you sign up annually as well. All that will be linked down below. But with that being said, peace out. We'll talk to you soon.